Since the days of Cleopatra, sexuality has been a weapon deployed to gain leverage. This is the art of seduction.
I know we come from different sides, but I know. We can put all that behind us. We can make something beautiful and new. All you have to do is meet me at the train station with the microfiche.
And time.
Anyone know where I can get a copy of that microfiche?
Yeah, that was hot.
Very good indeed. Star. And go.
I told you already, Mr. Peterson. The answer is no. I shouldn't even be meeting you right now.
Give me the microfiche, you bitch, or I'll kill you and your family.
Hello, and welcome back to the Stool Pigeons. I'm Harrison Davenport.
And I'm Jack Jameswood.
All right, Jack. So I'm happy to confirm that for the last 45 minutes, I've actually been looking over some show notes in prep for this since my performance last time was so terrible.
I should say that it wasn't just the last time. It's actually been all 15 or 16 episodes.
Well, I thought people were actually kind of liking that dynamic. You know, me as the unprepared host, you as the somewhat prepared host.
A lot of people have been writing in. I think I got 2,314 emails, and people are saying, so is this Mark Green replacement host going to happen? Because we all hate Harrison.
Well, they will be happy to know that's definitely not going to happen because our relationship with Mark on the Green is non-existent.
But good luck on the Patreon, though.
Yeah, go fuck yourself.
So, Harrison, what do you got prepared for us today? Well, for the first time, actually.
Yeah, so I wanted to give an update on the state of crypto, Bitcoin, blockchain, whatever we want to call this segment. I was kind of intrigued by this large real estate transaction that took place in all Bitcoin in Miami. It was $22.5 million for a condo. And I just found it interesting that Miami is slowly becoming the Bitcoin capital of the world, in addition to the cocaine capital of the world. But it then got me going down a rabbit hole of all of these transactions for real estate. Because I was like, I wonder how common this is. And so I went back to the origins of Bitcoin property transactions. And apparently the first all Bitcoin transaction actually took place in 2017 in Austin. And then over time, it is further developed. There was a penthouse in New York that sold for $15.3 million in Bitcoin. It was bought by a Taiwanese-based entity, Affluent International LCC. And then also, some other news, in just outside of Nashville, Tennessee, a $1 million Bitcoin transaction for a house also occurred, which is no surprising because the housing market is absolutely insane. So the point I guess I'm trying to make is we're not only propping up the speculative housing market that's just held up by all of these low interest rates, we're also propping up Bitcoin now, another extremely speculative and volatile market.
I thought it was funny that they had the Bitcoin conference in Miami, and I was looking at how many Bitcoins have been mined and how many more Bitcoins left to be mined. It's about 3 million, and the last Bitcoin that's been calculated will be minted in 2140, which also happens to be roughly the same time that Miami will be underwater, and as well as other parts of Florida.
That's awesome. Yeah. The energy it takes to actually mine a single Bitcoin is outrageous. Because I was looking up that some of the large tech companies, the graphics card producers, so that's NVIDIA and AMD, along with several others, they've been throttling back the ability to mine the hashes for Bitcoins. But apparently they have not been very successful in doing that. People have been finding their way around it.
It reminds me of a guy I worked construction with. He had this souped up truck. I can't remember what all he did to it, mostly because he wasn't a very interesting guy to listen to. But he did every possible redneck thing you could do to this truck that wasn't actually that nice. And I remember him saying, I can't remember, we were going to lunch one time at fucking McDonald's, and he was just peeling out of the parking lot. Someone mentioned, he's like, man, how many gallons do you get in this truck? He's like, I think 6 or 8. He was like, but it sounds awesome. That's essentially what Bitcoin is.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it is just totally destructive, but seems very sweet in the moment.
I mean, Bitcoin might be the only one that actually stands the test of time. And I think one of the reasons that you see all the cryptos and the NFT kind of cratering in the last couple months seems to be that people no longer have a stimulus check to gamble with.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, I think so. I think that's why MindMed should have had their IPO a little bit earlier.
They should have had it whenever they did the first stimulus check.
Oh, it would have crushed. I feel like it definitely would have crushed then. I haven't even really been following any of the news on MindMed since we've shifted all of our holdings into Bitcoin with this latest drop. I mean, it's a can't fail transaction, don't you think?
Well, I was listening to the Winklevoss twins and Jake Paul with Tim Dillon interviewing them at the Miami Bitcoin conference. And what they said was, buy the dip. Now, they've said that from the every single time that it dips. And I think it's good advice. I don't think anybody's lost money on that advice. When it goes down, you buy it. When it goes up, you also buy it because it's a solid investment.
Don't you think Ethereum has a chance to stay around too, just with all of the technologies that Ethereum blockchain is being integrated into?
Now, does every single one of these use a lot of energy, though? I mean, that's not going to be sustainable over time.
No, it's not. Yeah, I think all of them use a lot of energy. I had an old roommate and friend who he set up a small Bitcoin mining farm at his parents' house because he lived in San Francisco and the energy it took was way too expensive. So he talked his parents into letting him set it up in their garage because electricity is way cheaper where they live.
You could do it. I think China was setting up some kind of state subsidy, or maybe it was the government funding it directly, which was to set up a Bitcoin mining facility next to a hydroelectric dam so that it could be considered clean energy Bitcoin mining.
I still feel like it's not going to be clean energy, like no matter what, because you still have all of those parts that have to be produced to actually run the computer, and then they're essentially just going to get discarded, and those are going to end up in landfills as well after people have used those.
And technically, it's still a waste of energy. All you're doing is using resources that could be expended elsewhere to mine a stupid fake currency that some Japanese asshole created in 2011.
Oh, but if we had the money to set up huge rigs that used electricity, we would definitely do it. Like in Billions, remember they had that huge warehouse of servers that was just a small Bitcoin farm?
Apparently, you can't even, though, even the small Bitcoin farms are not lucrative. You have to have like just warehouse after like Walmart size, 100,000 square foot facilities to even do it anymore because they don't even operate on regular computers for mining. Because, yeah.
That guy, though, I know we talked about this off air, but the guy who spent 10,000 Bitcoin on a Papa John's pizza, I mean, that guy has to want to kill himself every day. I go back to like some of the stupid financial transactions that I've made. Where, you know, I was like, man, I really missed out or I shouldn't have done that. But nothing to that degree. I mean, I would hate myself every day.
I would love it if, no, well, not love it, but I do think it's funny that there are probably at least 100 people around the world who are pedophiles who were the earliest adopters of cryptocurrency because most of the early transactions were either for Silk Road or for child pornography. And they're like, look, everything's been breaking my way. I have been a pedophile my entire life and nothing has gone wrong for me yet. I have not been caught. And now I'm a millionaire because of my love of child pornography. And so I think I need to stick with it.
it's just emboldened them to continue with what they consider a mild taboo in the eyes of society.
Well, not a mild taboo. A lot of those people, there's actually a group in France, because France has weird age of consent laws. So they have lobbying groups that are still trying to make pedophile like normalized.
Yeah, that's where Roman Polanski still is to this day.
Yeah, 'cause the age of consent laws in France are like 11 or 12, I believe.
That's just not surprising with the French. I mean, just how they are. They probably just do that to get out of like having to hear court cases about it, because they only have court like 2 days a week now. Otherwise, they're just striking 5 days a week.
Well, if they wouldn't have banned cigarettes in the courtroom, but now they banned cigarettes and baguettes, so they can't really have any kind of judicial proceedings.
And the judges can't drink on the job anymore, or the jury.
And it also hurts that the work week there is 5 hours a week.
God, I wish they implemented a 30-hour work week in the U.S. That would be sweet. So just kind of going back to Bitcoin here for a second, what do you think about all of these like major transactions and just what they're being used for?
I mean, there's no way that these are not just fraudulent transactions in some way. They're a way to either evade taxes in the U.S. or internationally, or to hide some kind of ill-gotten gains from overseas from some corrupt dictator. Because why would you accept a Bitcoin transaction if you're a real estate person, unless you're just a psycho and are really into Bitcoin? Like, I'm sure those people, there's just Bitcoin enthusiasts that really want to accept real estate transactions in Bitcoin, but I couldn't imagine that if you were a serious real estate investor, you would want to accept a currency that fluctuates so wildly. That just doesn't seem like a very good deal.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, the Miami real estate transaction that went for $22.5 million, the price per square foot was $4,440.50.
Although, if you're looking at the Miami market in particular, like you said, it is the cocaine capital of the Western Hemisphere. So you have lots of people that are doing lines all the time and have extreme and unfounded confidence. So in between starting small businesses based on terrible ideas that you came up in a club bathroom at 2 o'clock in the morning, there probably are people like, dude, you know how we could change the real estate market? We could disrupt it. What if we start accepting Bitcoin as a transaction? And the other guy who's also on cocaine says yes, while the guy in the stall is like, Jesus Christ, people should do less cocaine.
He was just dragged there by his roommate, who is just a gay dancer at this boutique lounge.
Yeah. And well, and then the other guy in the stall is looking at child pornography because he's Larry, the child pornographer, who's like, man, I am the luckiest guy in the world. I went from being a guy that lived in a van and tried abducting children from local playgrounds to having a net worth of $30 million.
Yeah, he's just simultaneously jacking off to child pornography and his Bitcoin statement, his like USD dollar value.
Oh yeah. And the thing about having $30 million too is you're immune from any kind of law or prosecution.
But man, I just find it so interesting that these people are continuing to buy up all these assets. I mean, surely to God, they're going to eventually look into this, but I guess not when it involves like super wealthy people. They just don't really care. I'm referring to like the Justice Department or any type of regulatory agency.
Well, the agency that would look into that would be the IRS, which does investigations and then refers their investigations to the Justice Department. But I was listening to an interview with the former head of the IRS, and they said not only do they not have a centralized database where they can parse individual pieces of data that they do have, but that there's no way for them to actually trace any kind of like Bitcoin transaction. So the only time that you get anybody on tax fraud or evasion or some kind of like financial crime is when the Justice Department is looking at it for other things, like laundering money through for like cartels or doing some kind of other just illegal transactions like weapon sales or something else.
Unless it's a massive bank that's laundering money for the cartels. The U.S. was also okay with that for a long time. Wasn't it PNC or one of those banks that got caught? They had money from like ISIS or Al-Qaeda and also like several Mexican drug cartels.
Well, last summer, again, there was the Consortium of International Investigative Journalists did a blockbuster report that got maybe a day of coverage because it was during the presidential election, that every single one of the major banks was still laundering money for all the cartels, including Hamas and the Taliban and other like extremist groups like Boko Haram. And that they were documenting the stuff, but still allowing the transactions to go through. And they don't have to report it to the Justice Department. They just have to keep it on file. So they had the paperwork.
It's so they don't break the record retention policies. Because you do have to keep transaction records for, I think, like a period of 7 years for banking.
So somebody got a hold of all these documents and it was like, yeah, we approved a transaction for somebody in Saudi Arabia that was using this to like either buy weapons or fund like Iranian, like Shia or Sunni army to kill people.
I'm surprised that there's not more of those data leaks from banks with those transactions.
There are. They're just not covered very well in the United States because everybody's like, well, we knew this was going on. And then it's kind of like with all the reporting that the New York Times did last week or the Washington Post, where they reported all the tax evasion that was happening among like the wealthiest people in the world in the United States. And it was like, yeah, Jeff Bezos does receive the EITC earned income child tax credit because his income technically is only like $80,000 a year, so he was getting a tax rebate from the government.
I hope he was keeping it too.
No, he did, because he wasn't violating the law. It's because his income is something like $80,000. It's just that his wealth, which isn't taxed,
right? Because he owns everything in assets, right?
Well, he owns everything and in stocks, and so he keeps it, and so you never have to pay any taxes on your stock until you actually take it out as a capital gain, and then it's only taxed at 15%. So what a lot of the wealthiest people like in the country do is just never take their stock out, and then they die and they transfer it to their children, so it's never actually taxed. It just continues to grow throughout their lives.
That's the American dream, though.
Yeah, you know, ripping off the government and treating people like shit. That's like the best thing you can hope for here.
Yeah, you push for things like that to continue and more tax cuts, and you keep promising good paying jobs, which are always going to come with tax cuts, economic development, tourism, technology and innovation are going to go through the roof. I love those talking points because they're just not true. There's no data that actually supports that.
The reason that everyone else that isn't already wealthy is getting into like Bitcoin and Dogecoin and every other speculative investment is because they have no hope, no hope for the future. So they're like, the only thing that can maybe make our lives somewhat decent and make us feel a little bit secure if somebody gets into a car accident or needs like dental work is to just gamble on the dumbest fake currencies that some asshole created.
But once again, I think we're all in on those currencies now. I don't know if I told you I moved our financial holdings into Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, we'll see another one of those like insurrections, but a little bit better planned.
Insurrections in what way?
They call that January 6th like bullshit rally where no one really got hurt, like where it was like it was an insurrection on the Capitol. We need more of those.
Oh, I think so too. We gotta. Well, okay. I'll be careful and not say anything too dicey about political figures, just cause.
Well, you don't really have to. You can just quote Thomas Jefferson, who said every 20 years the roots of liberty should be, I can't remember, nurtured through like the blood of something. So he was basically saying you needed a violent revolution to overthrow the former governments like every 20 years, which I don't know. I mean, that's what he said. He was a founder, so I endorse it.
Yeah. And speaking of Bitcoin and violent revolution, El Salvador has recently approved Bitcoin for legal tender in their country. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's the president that came up with this new policy, you know, really was tapping into the pulse of his country, which doesn't have internet or really access to Bitcoin or can really invest in it in any way. I think that's a good idea. Also, I think it's a good idea to have lots of white people go to that country with money and set up shop there.
And they also have MS-13 for hire. They do have a Bitcoin wallet set up, though, where you can directly give them money.
Well, the only thing that's going to happen if people do go there, because some of the policies, I think El Salvador is one of the few countries in the world that doesn't have property tax, but the new president also was waiving citizenship requirements. So if you go there as a Bitcoin entrepreneur, you can get permanent citizenship by doing that as long as you're setting up some kind of Bitcoin related business. So I think MS-13 is going to have a stellar year this year. I don't think the people that are coming down there for Bitcoin are not going to do well, but MS-13, watch out, folks. They're going to really expand down in El Salvador. They're going to have a lot more income.
Yeah, it said in the article that I read that merchants were required to accept it unless they didn't have the technology to implement it. So essentially, no merchants have that technology because they live in dirt huts with sheet metal covering their business. And also, 70% of people in El Salvador don't even have access to financial services.
Here's the thing, though. You bring some of those Miami guys down there, they're going to disrupt the country. And pretty soon, they're going to turn it around, and it's going to be like Singapore in El Salvador. MS-13 is, they're going to just clean them up through jobs programs. And everything's going to turn around for them because Bitcoin is the future. I mean, what could go wrong with them actively mining active volcanoes down there? I think that's going to turn out to be very good.
So I was scanning this article. It was a press release from the president of El Salvador. And as I was saying, he has claimed that the law will bring financial inclusion, investment, tourism, innovation, and economic development for our country. Look at that. What a statement. I believe that.
I can't think of a single instance in history where wealthy white people that have no understanding of the history or culture of a country and cannot speak the language go down there and then try to impose their values on them to change and readjust their entire economy. There's not a single instance of that happening. I mean, look at what happened with North America. I mean, the Indians are doing well now. What are they doing? They're casino guys. They're millionaires. And you know why that happened? That's because the conquistadors and the English came over here and taught them Christianity and capitalism.
It was still hilarious, though, where we're still trying to fuck the Native American tribes with the Keystone XL pipeline. We're still trying to run it through Native American land, which they said violated treaties because we're also like poisoning their streams and their land again with oil, but they discontinued that. They finally pulled that permit. I just thought that was hilarious. Like every step of the way, Americans are always trying to fuck the natives.
Well, they're a little bit touchy about the whole drilling and tunneling pipelines through ancient ancestral burial grounds. I mean, that's one thing. For whatever reason, Christianity and capitalism just could not teach them to give up. So
everywhere we have put Native Americans, we have raped and pillaged after and then tried to steal everything they've gotten. Because where did we move them to? Was it North or South Dakota? And didn't they then find oil there? And then we started trying to kill them again?
Well, we moved them out into the plains and then we moved them out into the Dakotas. But where the reservations were at the time, settlers moving west after the Civil War found large deposits of gold and silver. So then they moved them to the most inhospitable places that couldn't even grow crops. And lots of them did not do very well. They did not flourish on places where you could not grow crops or move around or have any kind of sustainable life in an area that you're not familiar with and would not choose to live. But that just taught them how to bootstrap themselves to, you know, turn it around, taught them a little hardship, just like the settlers did.
Exactly. Yeah, we just, it's not enough that we just killed them with disease too, and the raping and the pillaging and stealing their land. We then move them somewhere, steal the resources they have. That's the American dream.
Well, but they have better lives now, because before the English and the conquistadors got here, it was mostly just government handouts. So they just had all these like government teepees, and they were sharing, doing potluck shit. But then, like I said, turned it around a couple hundred years later, they're casino guys. They're doing very well. There's not a single tribe now that is not some of the most prosperous people in that area.
And when we did send them packing to those places in Oklahoma and New Mexico, we also loaded them up with an endless supply of pure grain alcohol and moonshine.
Well, they liked it, and their immune systems were built for it. See, because they have a much lower tolerance. So it actually, the more alcohol you give them, it's like double. So it was very generous.
Basically, they owe reparations to the American people, is what you're trying to say.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, we helped them out quite a bit. And the thing is, settlers from Western Europe and, you know, Spain and other places, they didn't kill a single Indian anywhere. It was all disease. And if you're a Christian, that's just God's will. Maybe God wanted them to come to heaven, or maybe he wanted to punish them for eternity for doing heathen shit.
That's a good point. I hadn't even really thought of it that way.
Yeah, but there wasn't a single murder against a Native American. It was all disease. And they were friendly. I mean, the reason that they got disease was because they were hanging out with them and being so nice, but they just had a weakened immune system from, I don't know, not enough exercise. Oh, well, the last thing I would also say is there's never been an instance where we've ever been disparaging of Native Americans. I mean, what was one of the first Disney movies? Pocahontas. So what the settlers came over here to do was teach them tolerance and interracial marriage, because John Smith, he was like, whoa, one of the things that Western Europeans wanted to teach the Native Americans is that it's okay for different races to be engaged romantically and have sex and produce children. So I think those are all things that we have to consider when we think about Bitcoin.
Exactly.
So Harrison, what do we have up next?
Well, Jack, speaking of savages, The Atlantic recently did a pornography consumption among Americans survey. And it was very, very in-depth. There were some interesting findings.
Well, I mean, interesting findings in that it revealed that Americans more than ever are lying all the time. Because if you look at one of the last slides, it says 44% of those surveys said they had never watched porn before.
Was it 44%?
Yeah, it was 44%.
Well, that's 100% a lie.
Now, I looked into their methodology because I was trying to figure this out earlier, which is, what is watching porn? Because, you know, whenever I'm going through my executive time, so to speak, I find that it's actually the searching, you know, the refining and filtering of either a video you've seen before that you can't find, and then you become obsessed with finding it, or, you know, you want something very specific and you have to use keywords to find it, but you don't know. So you find yourself, you know, maybe a couple hours later on page 144 and you still haven't found it. And then you give up and just go back to whatever the popular video was. But apparently in the Atlantic survey, it just consists of the watch time. So how long you're actually watching the videos.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Because, you know, when you get one of those short, like 8 to 10 minute clips, you got to go back and find that full video on another website. You got to see the full action. You got to see the buildup. I mean, there's plot lines. These writers take their job seriously.
Always love it where there's a video where they won't show. It's a little bit of a teaser, or it's not exactly a teaser in the traditional sense, where it was just where you get 1 minute little clips. That used to happen back in the day in the early phases of the internet, where you would only have 1 minute clips and you had to pay for the rest. But I love it when, you know, I get caught up in a storyline, so to speak, and then you're like, God damn it, I have to see how this ends. And so you go searching for it and you're like, okay, you search for it on Google, you hit videos, and then you're like, okay, well, if I tap this site, what is going to happen? And most of the time, you know, sometimes when you just feel strongly about a narrative it's been constructed. You have to tap on it and see what's going to happen to your phone.
It's usually the Russian sites that'll get your phone. Like they'll get one of those like calendar add-in things, or your phone has been infected and you're like, oh shit, how do I X out of this? I knew I shouldn't have gone to Russian porno bukkake cumshot.xyz.
Yeah, I usually don't do that, but every once in a while, you know, you'll just see a video that's so good that maybe the site is all in Chinese characters and you have no idea what it is going to take you to, but you hit it. Actually, most of the time, they're not too bad. Usually, they won't fuck with your phone too badly. I've only had a couple of instances.
Even the domain address is in Chinese. Like, you don't even understand, like, if it's a .com or what it is. It's just all in Chinese. That would be... I've never been into the deep, dark areas of the web that only have Chinese for the site address.
Yeah, I've only done that a couple times. And I didn't get to see the video. So, you know, this is a little piece of advice on there. Do not be seduced or guided by your initial impulses, because they are tricking you into doing exactly playing into the Chinese hands.
Yeah, Google needs to put some restrictions on those thumbnails. They need to use the same critical eye that they have for the YouTube thumbnails.
Well, it's kind of like what you learn as a child, which is, what does Barney say to kids? He always tells them to use their imagination, you know? And so a lot of the times when you're feeling desire, you're like, I just have to jack off to this one video because it's so hot and they cut it off on Pornhub right before the cum shot. And, you know, you have to see the cum shot, especially if it's like a double blowjob or something like that. And it's like, this had to be hot. So I just need to see those extra 30 seconds. Think about what Barney would say. He would say, just use your imagination, kids. And that's exactly what you do as an adult. So very solid advice from Barney.
I think they should have had more questions like that in this survey. Like, can you only finish if you see a cum shot in the porn video? Like, those are relevant questions.
Or have you ever jacked off to a child's show like Barney? Have you ever jacked off to Barney, and would you? And for how much money?
Have you ever heard of doll cum on Reddit?
No one has heard of that. There's only 100 people subscribed to that subreddit, and I'm one of them.
I still haven't gone to that. I'm terrified of going there. I feel like they have to be tracking anyone that is subscribed to that sub.
Oh, well, the sub consists of just two men that are producing all the content. Although I did find someone finally reposted on Win Stupid Prizes, the guy that puts his dick into the baby alligator last night. I found it.
Oh, man. I think we played that in one of our episodes. I don't know what episode it was, but we did play the guy getting his dick bitten by the alligator. We played it on here. I don't remember when.
Or that might have been like one of the episodes that we did, that we early episodes that we create. I think because we did like two episodes that never really aired.
Let's just stick with we did it, and you'll have to listen to all of our episodes to find out which one it's in.
And if you didn't find it and you would like to see it and you know that it's not in our archive, I would head over there to Patreon, because that'll be up in about 30 minutes after this episode airs. You can guarantee that.
Yeah, and if it's not up on Patreon, just email the stool pigeons at gayrickgrimes.com, and we will have our assistant forward the video over.
Yeah, but absolutely do not go to the dangerous site Reddit and go to the subreddit that I referenced where it was at and posted. Go to our Patreon instead and give your credit card information.
Hello and welcome to Life Hacks. I'm Ben Johnson. I am a business consultant. Today, I have with me Jack Jameswood, and I will be interviewing him for a position within a company. Today, we're going to be doing a mock interview to show this candidate's business readiness. Hello, Jack. Are you ready to start?
Let me just say, sorry that I came in gym shorts and sandals. My suit got messed up at the cleaners, and my resume, I'll have it to you tomorrow. It's a damn printer was messed up at the Kinko's that I went to.
Sir, I also wanted to ask that you please not smoke in here. There's several signs on the door, and I believe the receptionist said you couldn't smoke in here. You're also smoking outside the interview room.
Oh, no, this is actually just a jewel. I got a special one that looked like a cigarette, but it's okay. So anyway, go ahead and ask your questions.
Okay. The first question, you've been given an elephant. You can't give it away or sell it. What would you do with the elephant?
As a business guy, the first thing you want to do is come up with a business plan. How can I make money off this elephant? This is pretty easy. You find all the suckers, the dentists that love going on the safaris. You tell them, hey, you come to my backyard safari where you can shoot my elephant. And then you give them a defective gun that blows their hands off whenever they fire it. And then the elephant stomps them. And then you have a reoccurring cycle of dumb dentists that are coming to kill this elephant that you kill with defective guns and the elephant stomping. And that's how you also cut your costs on elephant feed. You just feed the human remains to the elephant. So,
oh my. Okay. Well, I'm not even going to critique your answer. How about I just give you what an ideal candidate might say?
Sure.
Okay. For example, with this question, an ideal candidate might say, since I don't have a place to put an elephant, I'd probably send it on vacation, or I would feed it and then ride it to work. You know, for a question like this, Jack, the interviewer isn't looking for a specific answer. They're just trying to see how you think on your feet and how you'd handle yourself in unexpected situations. You did have an interesting answer there.
Here's what you want to do whenever you go into an interview, though. You want to make sure that you're projecting that you're smarter than the person that's asking you the questions. And see, the answers that the CEO or whatever came up with, they're wrong. And you want to be able to project that dominance over them so they'll feel insecure, because the answers about like riding an elephant to work or vacation, they're weak. And guess what? They're not money oriented. And what you want to do is when you go into an interview is show that everything is about making money and that you set aside any kind of like morality or legal concerns in an interview. And that's really what employers are looking for. That's the Unstead principle.
Jack, I'll be honest, I'm unsure how you even got into the room here. I don't know who screened you. I'm going to immediately follow up with that after this. How did you even get here, or how did you even apply for this? Because you didn't have a resume either.
The reason that I know so much about elephants is that I live in Florida, where there's an unregulated exotic animal market, and I have been doing pretty well for myself, been pretty liquid, because I did turn the elephant into a dick-sucking machine using its trunk, but the elephant died recently, so now I'm trying to find another job, another source of income.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, let's move on. Also, just a warning, elephants' trunks are strong enough to rip whole trees out of the ground, and you're making it suck your dick with
the trunk? No, not the trunk. It inhales. You know how it inhales the peanuts with its trunk?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that part of it, the hole, is where the dick sucking comes in. But you trained it to be, to have different variations in the sucking. So you don't want it to suck your dick off. Well, you do, but not literally. This is just the business that I had. I found it very successful. It's unfortunate that we had to do what we did with the animal that killed it, but that's in the past.
Oh, okay. Hey, Jack. So we went ahead and fired that weak weasel who was interviewing on the first question. And
well,
I'm going to go.
He had a heart attack because he was so overwhelmed with my dominant power positions when I came in that he had a heart attack.
Yeah. And we're just saying that because that guy killed himself. So I came along.
Actually, I killed him to show like the CEO what I could do if he hired me.
Okay. Well, that guy was not in any way doing any hiring. This was just a prep podcast for people to listen to and how to do job interviews. But anyway, who gives a shit? So let's see what that person had as their next question. Okay. How much do you charge to wash every window in Seattle?
The answer is $0. You get a tax credit because we all know Seattle is in chaos with all the defund the police and all the liberal shit they had. It's led to millions of people there being homeless. And they've set up all these little tent cities trying to advocate for, you know, justice and stuff and critical race theory. That's what they're doing. And so it's led to mass joblessness. There's not a single person in Seattle that's employed. So what you do as a business owner is you give lots of campaign donations to lots of state and federal politicians. And you say, hey, you want me to clean this up? I can give all these people jobs if you pay me through direct subsidies to round them up and to wash all the windows of all the offices. And so the answer is zero for you. But the government, as a independent contractor, you just give them a figure. So they're going to end up paying you $15 billion for this window washing public-private partnership that you have. And you don't even have to pay the workers because that's subsidized by the federal government and the state.
Well, that was a good answer. Let me see what this person's paper says. Okay, so what they were looking for is some basic math and multiplication. It was a problem-solving skills. So what they are looking for is, let's say there's the city consists of 10,000 city blocks. There's 1,000 windows per block. That's 10 million windows. And if you charge $5 per window, you'd make 50 million.
Yeah, my idea is actually what the CEOs would do in real life, though. They don't really want some like Asian guy that's calculating, doing long division and fucking multiplication in the office. They want a guy that's going to come in and be like, look, we're just going to corrupt the state government by giving campaign donations and taking them to golf courses and giving them front row tickets to the Seattle Supersonics or whatever. And then we round up the homeless with public money with the police, and then we have them be window washers and we make money, not the actual cost, because as a business person, you know, you don't want to have any cost. You want the government to pick up the tab.
Interesting. Yeah, the Supersonics, I should probably put a correction in there. They have not existed for probably 12 years. They relocated from Seattle to Oklahoma City.
Huh, interesting. See, if I was there, that would not have happened with my business ideas.
Next question. What's the color of money?
The color of money is green.
That is incorrect. What we're looking for here is... the ideal candidate would say it depends on the country. So it shows that you have world awareness and you have a critical eye towards evaluating markets and making global financial decisions.
Well, they are wrong, because what I would do is I'd pull out a wad of hundreds that I have in my back pocket and I would say, what is this? And they would say, money. And I would say, what color is it? Green. And I would say, so I'm right. And number two, the thing is, as a business guy, you don't give a shit what happens in other countries. They don't even exist. You just treat them as your little playground that you come in and destroy. You don't even respect other people's currencies or, you know, national sovereign boundaries. See, that's the kind of cuck mentality that these people have, that they're giving you on these little worksheets. But what real business people respect is dominance and exploitation. And they want you to say that in a job interview, that you would be able to do raping and killing for them if you hired me.
Right, which is what this segment is all about. You're giving people the answers that they don't hear. You're giving them the information that nobody wants them to know.
Yeah, these are the answers that I found on the dark web. And these are the real answers, not the fake ones that they do in like McGraw-Hill books that you get for business school. These are the real answers.
Next question. How would you sell hot cocoa in Florida?
Very simple. You have a business that sells hot cocoa, but you know you're not going to make any money. And the reason is it doesn't matter, because this is a front business to run illegal operations and mostly drug trafficking. So it'd be better if you don't ever sell any cocoa. You just have a building that you're just moving cocaine through, and that's how you make your money. And then you just lie to the IRS.
And you accept Bitcoin.
Yeah, you accept it. But the whole thing is, you're not doing any transaction. There's not actually any transactions going on at all. There's no one even coming in. There's not even cocoa there. You just have a cocoa business.
I like that. So what do you end up doing in the audit? Well, like if you get audited by the IRS and you don't even have cocoa or any business or anything like that?
Well, as a business owner, I don't respect what the government tells me to do. I think there should be less government. That's if they ask you what would you do if the government was trying to do stuff? You say, I'm the kind of person that thinks there shouldn't even be a government. I think that business owners actually should decide how the world works. If the IRS was like, hey, what about all this like stuff? I'd be like, yeah, I don't pay taxes. I don't respect the government.
Fuck yeah. All right. Next question. We finish the interview and you step outside the office and find a lottery ticket that ends up winning $10 million. What would you do?
Yeah, that's very simple. I would never go to that job. I would cash in the lottery ticket and enjoy my life for then on. And I would never work because working is stupid and it's for suckers.
Here is what the ideal candidate would say, which this is totally horseshit. The ideal candidate would say, I'd use the $10 million to travel, donate to charity, and provide for my family. However, I'd still want to work for your company. I've always enjoyed working in marketing, and I think this company puts a great emphasis on creativity and storytelling to help brands spread their message. So while I'd love to get $10 million, it wouldn't change my career goals.
I mean, that's absolutely the wrong answer. No one wants you to say that. Not a business person that you're going to respect. Oh, sir, if I had $10 million, I would still want to work for you as your like fucking slave and do marketing. You have $10 million, but you're going in, you're putting in like 40 hours a week doing goddamn marketing.
That's what I loved. I loved the candidate was working in marketing. I wish they would have made it like an even lower job. Like you're just an administrative assistant.
You're getting $10 million and your first thought is, oh, hey, I'll give this to charity. Well, have you thought anything about how much you're going to have to pay in taxes?
That's a good point. About half.
Right. So, yeah, fuck that answer too. That one sucks the worst.
And if you take the lump sum, you're not going to get $10 million either. It's going to be less, even before the taxes.
Right. But you would definitely tell the business person that's giving the interview, oh, I would tell you, I would probably come back in after I got the money, tell you to go fuck yourself and that I never had any respect for you or your company. And then you know what you would do? You would go into their bathroom and start pissing everywhere. Just piss on the mirrors, piss on the floor. And if someone's like taking a shit with their legs spread, you piss all over their pants and shoes. And then you walk out. That's a dominance move. That's the kind of shit that gorillas do.
No, then you go back in, you shoot your interviewer in the head and you claim stand your ground and you just do like a mic drop with the
gun.
And
you spend all of your money getting the best lawyers you can. And that's how you spend your money. Now, that would be cool. And they would respect that. It's another dominance move because they'll be like, damn, that guy's an alpha. He said he would kill me and piss all over our executive suite bathrooms.
Okay, moving on to the next question. What do you think of garden gnomes?
As anyone that's gone into business knows, you can't make money if your business is associated with ableism. That is discrimination. So garden gnomes are turning small people or what they used to call quote unquote midgets as, you know, mascots to put in your garden. And that is racism and bigotry. Now, as a you know, in the boardroom, now we all know that we drop the N-word and, you know, we talk, we say a few colorful things there, but to consumers, the brand has to be able to show through its marketing that we care about what happens to the disabled and we don't want to project or have our business associated with garden gnomes, which are ableist and are going to hurt our bottom line. And so you would tell the person that's doing the interview, we've got to break away from our association with garden gnomes.
I think that's actually the closest you got to what the ideal candidate would say. And the goal of this question is to react quickly to bizarre circumstances. So I think you actually did that with most of these questions, or you turned them into bizarre circumstances.
Actually, this question is what led to the Travelocity garden gnome. They had a guy like me, a straight shooter, that came in and told it like it is. And they're like, God damn, this guy. They just replaced the CEO because they were recording the interview. And they're like, God damn, this guy's dominant as shit.
Could you imagine if we actually did take over a podcast that was related to interviewing candidates, but we just did this? Maybe that's what we should pivot to.
Yeah,
we should, I mean, we should just get a sponsorship with Indeed.com.
Yeah, and Amazon. This is the, like, if you're a warehouse worker, this is the kind of shit, these are the answers that you want to give.
Seven people arrested for shooting their interviewee in the head. They didn't even win a lottery ticket. They just thought it was an alpha move that they heard from the stool pigeons.
Next day, warehouse worker that shot boss elevated to CEO.
Okay, well, I guess that concludes this dipshit's show. I'm not really sure what we're going to do with this dead body, but anyway... That is
what we do here. If this was an interview question, what would you do with the dead body that's in your house? That's an easy one, too. I mean, these are all easy questions, which is you go to a necrophile forum and you sell the corpse to somebody that wants to screw it for money. See, it's all about making money and not having any concerns about morality at all. That's what your boss wants to hear, is that you'll do anything. If it's like, sir, if you tell me to rape, I'm not only going to rape the person you told me to, but I'm going to do some other raping too. Because that's, you know, you just have to be, have a dominant personality and show you've got things under control.
See, folks, Jack's trying to teach you how to respond to those curveballs. He's a man who doesn't just hit fastballs. He can hit curveballs as well.
I cannot hit change-ups or do math, though, unfortunately.
No math. No math processing. Yeah, that area of his brain does not work.
Any also, simple... the reason that I can hit fastballs is because when I play baseball, I do anabolic steroids.
That's right. That's right. And by anabolic steroids, we just mean lots of Adderall and cocaine.
No, I mean the stuff that Stallone was on.
All right, Jack, you ready to get out of here?
Yeah, I just want to say something real quick, which is we just paused the episode and Harrison was bragging about how well he thought the episode went. And I said, yeah, that's because you actually just read the stuff we were going to talk about in advance, which is something that I always do. And he was surprised by this.
Yeah, I was fucking crushing it on this episode. I mean, I might not have brought everything I had last time, but this is probably the best performance I've ever had.
Yeah, I mean, Harrison's kind of like the person in a graduate seminar who, right before the teacher opens the door for class, is vigorously writing out what he's going to do for a 20-minute speech, and it just lands terribly. But he's found out that if you do preparation beforehand, things are a lot easier. He was surprised by this, so... That's another life hack.
I actually did that once for a long speech that I had. I was not prepared. I had a slideshow, but I actually hadn't gone through and done any of the slides. It actually went pretty well, I thought. I mean, the teacher didn't like it, and I didn't get a very good grade, but I thought the performance and energy I brought was good. It was about being a sports agent.
Well, dude, you just play 15 minutes of Jerry Maguire, and you're like, anything else?
And then it had to be my own written work. And I was like, well, I guess I can just lie about being a sports agent and closing all of these sweet deals.
Dude, you should just take the best quotes from Jerry Maguire and just pass them off as your own. How long was the speech?
I don't particularly remember. You know what?
Why were you a fucking sports agent? What kind of gay ass class was this? Was this fifth grade?
I don't remember. I remember everyone else in the class thought it was pretty terrible, too. I wasn't expecting any follow-up questions this. All right, Jack, well, you ready to go ahead and get out of here?
Harrison did his undergraduate as a communication major, and they always make you do like, okay, pretend that you're on the playground and a bully says something mean to you. What do you do to stand up to them?
Hey, I was great. I was great in that department.
Anywho...
Okay, so usual reminders, everyone. You can follow us on YouTube. You can also subscribe to our Patreon, which you guys have clearly not been doing at the rate we wanted. We have mainly people from our YouTube page on our Patreon, but I'm not going to ramble too long. And you can follow us on Twitter, which we never actually check. Oh, also, and remember to rate, subscribe, and review on Apple Podcast. All right. Well, thank you for listening.